I'm Mark Brazell, and this is Cincinnati Edition. It's time to go on the money with Chris DiSimeo and his guest from Johnson Investment Counsel.
Well, the World Series just inches closer and closer and closer, and people are kind of wondering just what inning this recent rally might still be in, as earnings reports grabbed center stage last week. Some were better than expected and others not quite, and the market was batted about by different results coming from some marquee names. Well, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show our friends Jason Jackman and Dale Coates. Jason and Dale are both chartered financial analysts who work at Johnson Investment Counsel. Jason, been in the business many years and a graduate of Wittenberg University, and Dale hails from Miami University. And gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
First things first, you were at the Reds game that Wednesday night when they could have won it.
Absolutely. Tough night.
Tough night.
Tough night. And I think it's hard when we watch stocks go down. This was hard.
I mentioned it last week, but for a brief shining moment, there were no Democrats, there were no Republicans, there were 44,000 people in that stadium who wanted the same thing, and they just didn't get it. But, you know, earnings, as they're coming out, are kind of like that, too. You expect one thing, and something else pops up. We've had, even yesterday, Friday, we had companies in seemingly the same industries, in the industrials, do better than another. Are we looking at a market now where you just can't talk about the market as a whole or a sector as a whole? Or are we becoming a stock picker's market?
Well, the problem is the economy is slow. And it's not just the United States economy, it's the global economy. We're at about the slowest growth rate we've been at from a global perspective in a long, long time. And a lot of companies have built up their business to invest in Europe and China and Latin America as well as the United States. And so depending on where you're operating, depending on what product you have, you're getting very distinct results in this economy these days.
Yeah, there had been a big concern that China was heading for some kind of landing, hard or soft, and yet in midweek we got the report that their economy had contracted. It was only growing at a 7.4% rate. Is this something that we should look at as being meaningful for us, or is there something other than that fundamentally going on in China, such as their turnover in their government, that might be more important?
It's important to look at, because when you look at the global economy, there aren't many engines of growth today. You look at the subpar growth in the United States. Europe is clearly struggling, probably in a recession. Japan not doing well. So the emerging economies are really that engine of growth, and they are slowing. We're seeing it. May we have 7.9% growth in the U.S., may that be so. But it's good growth, but it is definitely down from the 8s, 9s, and 10s that we've become accustomed to in China. 7.9 is slower, and it is impacting those companies that do business in China, and it's impacting just global growth rates.
Is that one of the elements, then, that could be behind this sort of cumulative group hesitation that we're seeing, where spending might be slowing down at the corporate level because they just don't know where growth is going to happen?
That's part of it, no question about it. We have a very difficult environment for companies to invest in right now. And next year's fiscal cliff, will it happen? How far will we fall? What outcome from the election? What impact will that have on fiscal policy, on regulatory policy? We have two candidates with very diverse, very distinct directions that they want to take our country in, and companies are afraid to invest ahead of that. And combine that with some concern about the growth rates outside the United States, and we're seeing people just sit on their cash.
Yeah, yeah, lots of it, like trillions.
Trillions and trillions of dollars, Chris.
Yeah, Carl Sagan just didn't live quite long enough to get to say trillions and trillions instead of billions and billions. Without really getting into, you know, who should win or who's the better candidate, if someone believes that the incumbent is going to be reelected, what are the kinds of companies, what sectors in general should someone be looking at if they think the incumbent's going to be reelected or if they think the challenger will be elected? What are the two kinds of portfolio benchmarks that we should be looking at?
Well, the one thing that kind of jumps off the page is in the healthcare field. Obviously, Obamacare, as it's come to be known, is in place and will be rolled out over time. If reelected, it's his drive to make sure that's a reality. the stocks had already previously adjusted. Companies had adjusted their thinking. The stock valuations had changed in anticipation of this coming to fruition. Now, with Romney and President Obama basically neck and neck, there's some hesitation now among investors regarding the healthcare field. So Obama being reelected could have a more positive influence again on the healthcare segment.
Okay. And for the Challenger, Challenger likes coal, and you've seen these coal names go straight up. But what else?
Well, the one thing that is unknown, really, I think, with Romney is what will the impact of some of the fiscal changes he wants to take place, what impact will that have sector to sector? I think the one thing it would do would give greater confidence about the future of regulatory and tax policy to companies. And that would begin to see more investment in their business, particularly businesses that have held back for some period of time. So I think it's more of a broad view if, in fact, Romney is elected.
You know, recently there was a shakeup in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. It happens from time to time. Companies, you know, change their makeup, or they get kicked out of the Dow just because the editors of the Wall Street Journal or the Dow Jones company decide to do it. But with Kraft kind of splitting itself into two pieces, Kraft and the Mondelez, whatever, what an interesting sounding name. The replacement was United Healthcare. When you look at these big insurance companies, are those healthcare companies? Do they go fall into that sector, or are they financials? How do you?
They're a real blend of the two.
That critter.
They're a real blend of the two. They have the same. Obviously, premiums are driven by healthcare spending, but it's really an insurance product they're selling, and they have the same risks any insurer would have. They take in our premiums, invest it, and then they have to pay it out in the future based on claim experience. Obviously, that's an insurance company, which is a financial. So they're a real blend of the two. The one thing that's interesting is traditionally healthcare valuations have been higher than those of financial valuations. So investors can get confused at times as to which segment these companies land in, and the valuations of the stocks can move around rather sharply as a result.
They most certainly do. Speaking of numbers, we live in a world that's just based on numbers, you know, whether it's batting averages in baseball or P.E. ratios. Last week, we got a peek at this unemployment figure. If you look at the last two releases, the prior week, we were down 39,000, and that was a shocking variation or deviation from what consensus had been. And then yesterday, probably on Thursday, the day before yesterday, we get a number that's up a whole bunch. Has this kind of volatility caused you to look under the hood and check these numbers to see what is behind these huge variations?
We have had some unique numbers come out of unemployment, surprising drop to 7.8%, and then with jobless claims, as you're alluding to, we've had some week-to-week volatility here. There is a reason that initial jobless claims, you usually look at a four-week moving average, because there is a meaningful amount of variation in the numbers week to week. So it is important not to draw too big of conclusions from one week's number. Really, if you look at the four-week moving average, we've been steady at about 365,000 initial jobless claims for two straight weeks, which is probably fairly reflective of where the underlying strength of the labor market is.
What are some of the other handy ways you professional money managers use that would be something accessible for individual investors to kind of smooth out the noise? What you know, 4 week moving average, and are there other techniques, other tools that are handy and useful?
Certainly, the payroll job number is one that's been more consistent, and from what we've seen of the unemployment rate. The unemployment right now is losing a little bit of its luster because there's been so much variation in what the true labor force is. People dropping out of the labor force, is that impacting the number more than job creation? So what we've generally had in labor conditions is really growth in the job market, but not great growth. And that's being reflected in overall GDP numbers.
Right. There's that phrase again. It's growth, but it's not great. We've had a 30-year rally in bond prices. It's hard to believe that interest rates have been dropping for all those years. Some firms are calling for the end of this bull market in bonds. Does your firm expect interest rates to start going up at some point? And if so, when would it happen?
It's not imminent in our mind. When we look at what it'll take to move interest rates meaningfully, I'm not talking about a half percent here, a percent there, but to meaningfully adjust the interest rate regime. there's two main things that need to adjust. One is Fed policy. Right now, the Fed is committed to keeping short-term interest rates near zero through mid-2015. And the other is the inflation outlook. And when we think of the inputs into the inflation outlook, whether it be the output gap, we're still not running at full capacity in this economy, or we look at wage gains, both are very well restrained and unlikely to lead to meaningful inflation pressure in the near term.
And so bonds, even though if you look at the 10-year Treasury, some people are saying that's like buying a stock at 100 times earnings. How do you then get yield in the last half minute or so that we have? Where do investors go then for income if the bond market is walled off?
Well, within the bond market, we there are segments that offer some yield. We think the credit market, corporates, municipal bonds, still offer a yield advantage to treasuries and government securities that's of value. Of course, you've got to do your homework and be sure it's a sound company or municipality. Dividends are still growing. One of the things that we've been pleasantly surprised by is the amount of growth in the dividend from companies, good quality companies. And again, the market's volatile. We're at a high point, but companies are great raising their dividend rate. And dividend yields today are higher than Treasury yields, which is an unusual circumstance in the last 50 years.
Yeah. So stay tuned. Don't touch that dial. Well, I want to thank both of you so much for being with us, Jason Jacklin and Dale Coates from Johnson Investment Counsel. Thanks again.
Thank you.
For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Chris DeSimio on The Money.